from the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona. This is Market Movers, the podcast that gives you a closer look at the financial markets to trade responsibly. Here are your hosts, Lior Cohen and Yochai Elam.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us and spreading the good word about our podcast. Much appreciated. And I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen. And joining me, he is still waiting for his e-vite for the G20 summit, Yochai Elam. How is it going, Yochai?
Hi, Lior. I'm doing great. Yeah, still waiting, looking at my mailbox every day, and well, nothing happens.
No, nobody calls you for some reason. I thought you and Draghi are BFFs or something like that.
It's apparently unilateral, but I'll live with it. He supplies me a lot of work and a lot of action, so I can't complain too much.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, because he gave us a lot of drama in the previous ECB rating decision, not this one, but we can't complain about that, right?
Yeah.
In this show, we're going to examine the latest from the minutes of the FOMC meeting. There were a lot of commotion. The market will review the JOLTS report, and we'll examine some of the recent developments in the oil market. Keep us quite busy this week. And if we'll have time, we'll also review the next week's main events to look out. But first, let's start with the all-inclusive U.S. labor market. So, in the last non-farm payroll reports, it was very positive. You know, it was much better than the previous one. We had a bit of a market reaction that, oh, things are getting much better now and the labor market is on the right track. Is the labor market doing so well? I'm asking this question, Yochai, because I remember writing about this in Seeking Alpha about the labor market also and how it relates to gold, how it has some impact, indirect impact on the prices of gold, of course, and has other implications to the US dollar and etc. A lot of people said, oh, yeah, you're saying it's doing better, but so ergo it's doing well. No. There is doing better and there is doing well. Just because something is doing better doesn't mean, oh, it's all good now, it's in the right track.
Yeah, it's starting from a really low point, so there's still a lot of way to go.
Yeah, so if it's doing better, it doesn't mean that necessarily it's on, it means that it's on the right track, but it doesn't mean necessarily that now everything is good and it's in such a good shape. So let's start with that. So what's your take? Do you really think that the labor market is, for first, is it on the right track on this front?
Yeah, I certainly think it's on the right track. We were seeing, especially in the past year, a significant gain in jobs, above 200,000 on average in the last 9 months. It's stronger than the previous year, which was also okay. In general, we're seeing job growth since late 2010, and it's consistent and steady, and that's good news.
Yes, but on the other hand, we also have to mark some other components of the labor, of the non-farm payroll report that give us some indications, and also it connects to the JOLTS report that shows that there are some still voices for concern, and there is a lot of still slack in the labor market. It's especially when you look at, for instance, the labor force participation rate. It has fallen dramatically.
Exactly, it fell to a new low.
Yeah, it fell dramatically from 65.5 around beginning of 2010. It's back then it was 65.5, now it's already down to around, 62-63%. So we have that to consider. And even though it does coincide with the decline in unemployment rate, it's still something that shows there is concern about fewer people actually are taking part in the labor force.
Yeah, so part of that is related to demographics. I mean, this is the generation where the baby boomers from the Second World War, people born during the Second World War, are retiring, getting out of the labor force. So part of this fall in the participation rate is, of course, natural, related to age, but not all of that is like that.
Yeah, so we have that to consider. And also, if you look a little bit even further into the other smaller numbers of such as a job leavers, for instance, it's not a big number. It's we're talking about millions. We're not talking about big numbers, but still, we still see that for job leavers, it's pretty low. It's fell to 829,000. So yeah, it's not a big number, but it's still a little bit of indication about how many people do leave their job for an upgrade to another job. So there is that to consider. Employment, and of course, employed persons at part-time jobs also. another big indication, and the FOMC continues to talk about that as well, that people who leave for economic reasons, it's also another indication that it's pretty much declined, but there's still some room for improvement.
Right, so that's called underemployment, and people that want a full-time job and only can get a part-time job, and also those too discouraged to look for a job, and this is called real unemployment rate, or U6, and it did fall as well from the highs. It was above 17%. Now it fell to 11.8% in the recent report, but that's still very high. That's significantly above the official unemployment rate, which is just below 6%.
So we're still in a place where there is some signs of improvement, but there are still some concerns about the slack in the labor market and how it's actually doing, especially when we said, as we said, some things like some indicators such as participation rate, unemployment, unemployed, the real unemployment, if you will, with air quotes I'm doing, and other indications show that there is some signs of an ongoing slack, but it does improve, but there's still much more room to improvement, and I think this is maybe one of the factors to consider that keeps the FOMC such on the middle ground, with not giving any clear indication about its future guidance.
One thing to worry about, I mean, everybody's worried about, is salaries. I mean, they've never really recovered from the crisis. So the unemployment rate is back to pre-crisis levels, jobless claims as well, but salaries have hardly gone up. They're sort of keeping track with inflation, but they fell quite a lot and they aren't going up. Now, I think there is just a lag between the time that people get jobs and until salaries go up. The same as there is a lag between economic growth, GDP growth, and job creation. So I think it's just a matter of time, and the Fed is being perhaps a bit too cautious. What do you think about it?
Well, I think that on the one hand, you're right that there could be a little bit of a what they say in economic term, the sticky prices when it comes also to wages, that, you know, it takes a lot more time for prices, and in this case wages, to be updated. And yes, wages remain pretty stagnant, around 2% growth in the past year or so. So that's really in line with inflation. And one component, as I said, is to see also the job leavers. Again, it's not a big number, but it gives us a little bit of indication that when people don't leave their job for better jobs, then this is one of the factors to consider to push up wages. And we don't see that. We also see this still, that there's a big chunk of employed people for part-time. That's also one indication. So I still think that the FOMC should, well, and maybe that's what it does, sides on caution. And I think they should even do even more and keep rates at the lower for a longer period, because if you put on the scale two factors, on the one hand you put the labor market, of course, and the other one is the inflation, and these are the main concerns the FOMC has. If you look at the labor market, we see that there is slack. We don't know how much. It's pretty hard to determine what it is. But on the other hand, there is inflation that remains pretty stable and even below the FOMC's target in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
So if it will raise rates, they want to do it. One of the main reasons is because they don't want to reach a situation where there is a rising inflation. They want to keep their target. So that's one of the main factors they want to consider. So there is that risk. On the other hand, there's the risk that if they'll raise rates, the slack in the labor market will only widen and will become even, and the improvement that we saw will only now take a step back because they raise rates, and that could also lead to a cool down in the recent rally.
Yeah, I still think that because of this lag I was talking about before, that they might be a bit behind the curve. I think they should raise rates just before, if they can do it, before wages start rising and before core inflation, which is based on wages, basically, begins rising. I think that wages do sometimes move up around the beginning of the year in existing jobs, and of course jump when people exchange jobs from their own free will. And I believe that if the Fed waits too long, they'll have to compromise for not a gradual rise in rates, but rather a fast one and perhaps violent one, and that would be more disruptive than beginning to move sooner and get the markets used to higher rates sooner rather than later.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have to disagree on this issue. And
right.
I understand your point of view, and I still also will point out that if you look at, for instance, that economies like Japan, they had low rates and their economy is pretty stagnant for what? Over 15, 20 years now. So we have that to consider. And in the US might be in the situation where Japan is. And in regards that we might even see the US economy, well, it's doing much better than Japan, that's for sure. But it could still be in that situation for many years to follow. We don't know that. And the slack in the labor market, as we said, it's pretty hard to determine it, and we'll only know it in hindsight. Hindsight is 20, vision is 2020. We only know it after they'll raise rates, after we'll see how the market will react, and we'll see if the labor market will continue to improve or not. And when we talk about the labor market, we talk about inflation, then obviously the next full point is to talk about the FOMC.
Right, that's their two mandates.
Yeah, that was pretty big excitement. On the one hand, I must tell you that there wasn't like a clear understanding that when I read the minutes that you said, yeah, I know they're going very hawkish, they're going very dovish, they're going in this direction, they're going that direction. There were a lot of, a lot of conversations, and they took it to a lot of different routes, and yet the market had such a sharp reaction. So what happened there?
Yeah, well, as I see it, especially regarding dollars, the markets bottomed out on Friday. On Friday, we had the excellent non-farm perils. Dollar went further and further, and it really reached overextended levels. For example, in euro dollar reached 125 and we bounced from there. In pound dollar we fell below 160. In Aussie dollar we fell to a new low since 2010. But that was it. On Monday, the dollar began reversing the gains, finally making this long-awaited correction. And when the minutes came out, markets focused on the more dovish stuff, and the dollar was sold off. And what was the dovish stuff? Well, two main things. First, regarding the dollar, they just said the dollar is too strong, and it could hurt exports and cause disinflationary pressures. So that was a clear sign, especially for the dollar. But even more important was the concerns they voiced over global growth, especially around the Eurozone. So this notion that the U.S. can grow alone and the rest of the world can slump, can continue muddling along is wrong, at least according to the Fed. As you said, the minutes were quite balanced. They had views from the hawks, views from the doves, but the market reaction depends also on the analysis that reporters make. One name to point out is John Hilzenrath of the Wall Street Journal, and he focused on the concerns. So if the Fed is concerned, it won't move soon. If it won't move soon, stocks go up, the dollar goes down, and that's the huge reaction that we saw yesterday.
So it also goes down to not only what the minutes actually say, but what the analysts say about the minutes. So that's like a secondhand smoke, if you will. That we don't inhale what the Fed actually gives us, but actually what analysts and reporters give us from their perspective about what the minutes indicate.
Exactly.
And when it comes to the concerns that they voiced, obviously you said there's the euro. There's also it also goes in conjunction with what we saw from the IMF, that they also revised down its economic outlook for the global economic outlook for 2014, 2015. So it also goes in conjecture, I think, the recent market reaction for both fronts, from the concerns the FOMC voiced, and also what the IMF, that they revised down its global economic outlook. And when you said about these issues that they have some reservations, the FOMC, it also comes back to the old notion of considerable time. It was also one of the issues that they voiced their opinion about.
Right. So back in September, when the decision was released, we saw that for the first time, at least in a very, very long time, 2 out of 10 voters dissented, and they voted against leaving this considerable time phrase. So that was relatively hawkish. And now we've seen that the Fed is as Jonathan Farrow of Bloomberg TV said, a bit afraid of its own shadow. They were cautious about just changing this timing in order not to cause another taper tantrum, as we've seen it from Bernanke back in May and June 2013. They were sort of debating about the communication in another communication. The meeting minutes is another communication that everybody's well aware of. It seems they went there a bit too far entangled with themselves and a bit stuck. Eventually, they'll have to move this report because I think eventually the data, and they say they're always data dependent, the data will improve. Specifically, this meeting was held in the middle of September. Since then, we had the excellent non-farm payrolls report, a gain of 248,000 jobs in September, revisions worth 69,000 for previous months. Another thing, we had the JALTS report. You mentioned before the quit rate that's part of this report. It reached the strongest level since 2001. That's a 13-year high.
Wow. So that's another big boon, if you will, for the slow improvement or even a little bit rapidly improving a labor market.
Right. And that was for the month of August. It's a lagging report. And the month of August saw a smaller gain in non-farm payrolls. So September might even be better. And last figure related to the job markets that we had today, just before the recording, is jobless claims. They didn't reach a new low on a weekly basis, but they remained around the previous levels, low levels of 287,000. And the four-week moving average, it fell to an eight-year low, the lowest since February 2006. So all in all, the labor market is moving a bit faster, and that's why I'm optimistic about wages as well, but time will tell, and we'll be very smart in hindsight, as you said.
And when you said about the labor market, I quote from the minutes, participants noted variously that the level of non-farm payrolls had only recently returned to its pre-recession level. The number of individuals working part-time for economic reasons was still elevated relative to the level of unemployment, and that labor force participation rate was still below assessments of its structural trend. They said, as we said earlier in the show, that there are some concerns, but still, even with the August report that wasn't too impressive, they still said that it's returning to pre-recession levels. When we look about what do we take from the minutes, then obviously they have their reservations about the US dollar, economic global economic growth, everything you mentioned. But what does it mean about the next rate hike? Do we know anything more than what we did before the minutes?
Well, we know the Fed is officially concerned about the US dollar, and that's a bit dollar bearish. So I don't think we'll see another huge rally in the US dollar. That's my significant take. But as I said, it's a bit dated, the minutes. Since then, we have new fresh data that has improved and has erased the bad notion from August's non-farm payrolls. I think that in October, another take we can easily take, but it's not a big surprise from these minutes, is that the phrase considerable time will stay at least in October. But I think that in December, that's the time that we'll have a bit more news. If we get, assuming we get more positive figures, we'll have figures for the third quarter GDP report. It comes already in late October, the first estimate, and then we have more estimates in another one in November. And I think that's the time when they can either remove this word or make another magic trick with their wording and hint of an earlier rate hike. Well, I'm optimistic.
So yeah, maybe it'll be not considerable time, but not so very considerable time or something like that. Yeah, or maybe they'll articulate it a little bit better than what I do, but okay. And speaking about all the recent news about the economic growth and the concerns, also we had the report from the IMF, and that brings us to the recent developments in the oil market. So we saw that oil prices, took a bit of a dive, if you will, and now it's trading around $86, the WTI. So that's a new year low, and it's been a long time since we saw oil prices at the mid 80s. So has the oil market became so loose or something like that? Well, For one thing, I think it all comes to down to the recent news about the IMF when it comes from the demand side, that they have revised down their economic guidance about the global economic growth for 2000. As I said earlier, for 2014, they revised it down by 0.4 percentage points to 3.3%. And for 2015, they also revised it down to 3.8%. So
yeah, Christine Lagarde called it the new mediocre instead of the new normal.
Yeah, so yeah, we have that. And the voice that there are some problems in the big economies such as China and Brazil. China, they've revised down to they said that the economic growth in by 2016 could even reach only 6.5% from 7.4%. So that's pretty low for one. Brazil also only expected to reach next year 1.4%. So that's 0.6 percentage points below the FOMC, the IMF's last assessment. And that's for these big economies. That's not a good sign. And especially China, which is this. The second largest consumer of oil after the US. But we also had a little bit of news from the supply side, because as we know, OPEC doesn't like oil at the mid-80s and they want it even higher, and they voice some issues such as in the countries such as Iran voice their concern about the recent fall in oil prices.
Yeah, but they're a bit in discord with Saudi Arabia, right? OPEC isn't really functioning at their best, let's say.
Yeah, it's kind of a reunion and from 20 years ago, and people, yeah, that used to be friends are now very far apart. That's what it seems like, that the OPEC members aren't so in line with where they see oil prices. And just recently, to talk about Saudi Arabia, yeah, they recently lowered their asking price for oil for next month's deliveries without even deliberating it with other OPEC members. So that's another issue that pressured down oil prices. And if you consider that, along with from the US, we're still seeing very slowly, steady. A growth in the U.S. Production is at 1.7 million barrels per day, which is roughly 12% than what it was last year. And there are some positive reaction from the supply side. There are some concerns from the demand side, and thus we see oil prices go down. But I will also note that at least from the U.S., there is a strong growth in the demand for oil. And I don't think that for now, it doesn't seem that the supply is growing at the same pace as the demand. Because because even though there is some strong growth in the production, on the other hand, the imports are continuing to slowly come down. And which makes sense, because production goes up, imports go down, but still, as a total, they're still not growing at the same pace as the demand with when we look at the refinery inputs.
It's never balanced, never fully balanced.
So these kind of issues, when you look at it as a whole, maybe over a short period of time, we might see a little bit of a rally even of oil prices if this kind of issue will not resolve itself. But yeah, for now, I think that oil prices will continue to come down, maybe to the low 80s. But again, we can never know, because one false move from one of OPEC members or another war in the Middle East, and we'll see oil prices go back right up to the 90s.
Yeah, you can never know about these things.
A lot of issues here, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have yous. So we have that. Okay, and turning from oil, let's see just a quick review for what's up ahead for next week. So we have some major economic reports from the US, a little bit from China, not as major as we had this week, at least from the minutes that had such a sharp reaction, but still. We have some interesting issues to consider. One is the PPI. We have the retail sales, Philly Fed manufacturing index, and housing starts and building permits. That's from the US. And from China, we have a CPI. We have also the final CPI from Europe. So we have a lot of inflation reports next week. What's your take? What should be for the lookout, Yuhai?
Yeah, well, I think we'll have a slow start on Monday because of Columbus Day in the United States and also holidays in Japan and Canada. But I think it has become, as you said, more interesting. For Europe, we also have the German ZW figure, which is getting close to zero, which means negative sentiment. It's still positive, but it's getting close. Tuesday and Wednesday, we have interesting data from the UK. We have the jobs data. Also there, the focus is now on average earnings and on wages. We'll talk about the Bank of England, I guess, another time. As you said, on Wednesday, we also have retail sales and PPI from the US. And we have another look at the US consumer on Friday with the consumer confidence from the University of Michigan just before the market closes. The correlation between retail sales and consumer confidence is iffy, sketchy, but it does move the market, especially when the traders are nervous on Friday afternoon.
Okay. Yeah. And when it comes to housing, the housing market, is still progressing, or do we see some slowdown?
It's still doing okay, I think, and there is a strong correlation in this case between housing and the general health of the economy. So we have building permits and housing starts also on Friday. Sometimes these go in different directions. One goes up, the other goes down, and it leaves us a bit confused. They're standing at both at around an annual level of 1 million, so which is higher.
So it remains pretty stable.
Yeah, I think the bigger impact will come from the retail sales. That's for me the main US event next week.
Yeah, and I also mentioned that when it comes to the Philly Fed, it usually tends to be a little bit of a preview for the GDP. But yeah, usually the Philly Fed, only if there's such a sharp shift in the survey, then we'll see a market reaction. Usually if it's a little bit 5 to 10% here, 5 to 10% there on a month-to-month basis, because it had a lot of noise in it, then we probably won't see a reaction. But if there will be a sharp change in the survey of 20-30%, then we could see a big maybe a market reaction from that report as well. So that's it for now. Thank you all for listening. If you like our show, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and you can subscribe to the show via Stitcher, email, RSS, or iTunes, whatever suits your fancy. So thank you as usual, Yochai.
Thank you as well, and stay tuned for our next shows.
Yes, stay tuned. So until next time, this is Lior signing off for Yochai, saying have a great week and invest responsibly.
For comments, suggestions, and questions, visit the podcast page at forexcrunch.com or tradingnrg.com, where you can also find past episodes and subscribe to the show. Our listeners make market movers possible.